Welcome to Hoboken Grace. For those of you who may be with us for the first time, my name is Chris, and I'm the teaching pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And right now we're in the middle of a conversation called Destinations. And for the last couple weeks, we've been talking through this principle called the principle of the path. And simply stated, it's this: our direction, not our intentions, will determine our destination. And so it doesn't matter how badly you hope that your life is going to end up somewhere. It doesn't matter how much you believe that your life is going to end up somewhere. What matters is the choices that you're making and the direction that you're headed. And that will determine your destination. It's been awesome as we've been having this conversation, and as we've been talking through this, we've been talking about the fact that sometimes we need to get off of a path. And one of the verses that we memorized as we walked through this together is that the prudent see danger and take refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer harm. And we talked through that, and we talked through, okay, how do you get off that path? And it was interesting because a couple weeks ago I brought to you a story of a guy named Josh Hamilton, right? Because he was basically living out the perfect picture of this idea of path, right? And Josh understood, and for those of you who don't know the story, Josh is a baseball player for the Texas Rangers, and as they've been making their way throughout this playoffs, this story has been playing out in Josh's life. It's been amazing to see. He's an outfielder, and I know that when I said Texas Rangers, like 80% of you just felt total disgust, right, because of what happened last night, and it's even hard for me to tell the story at this point, but being a Yankees fan, I have to put that aside because this is an incredible story. And I told you this story about how in Josh's life, he's been struggling with addiction for years and years and years. And when his team finally clinched their playoff berth, there was this huge celebration in the locker room. And Josh looked at the paths in front of him and he realized, listen, if I go into that locker room where there's champagne flying everywhere, it's going to take me in a direction I do not want to go. And my destination will be someplace I do not want to be. And so he decided to, instead of going to the locker room to celebrate with his team, to walk into the trainer's room and to kind of have a celebration by himself and then to go home. And we talked through this idea of getting off of a bad path and the fact that it was going to include several different things. It was going to take sacrifice, right? It was going to be a little bit embarrassing. And we talked about how in Josh's story, you saw this play out and you saw him take this incredible sacrifice, and it was a little bit embarrassing. But I told you that at one point he was going to experience relief. And it was awesome to see what happened when his team, just a couple days ago, took the next step in their journey. Because they finally made it to the playoffs, but the Texas Rangers had never, ever won a playoff series in their history. And a couple days ago, for the very first time, they won a playoff series, right? And so Josh Hamilton, I'm sure in his mind, he's thinking to himself, okay, this is going to play out exactly the way that it played out at the end of the season, and I'm going to have to walk back there, and I'm going to have to walk into the trainer's room, and it's going to take a tremendous amount of sacrifice, and it's going to be a little bit embarrassing. And as they made their way off the field, his teammates had prepared for this moment. And there were bottles of ginger ale that lined the edges of the locker room. And they invited Josh to come in and to celebrate with them. It was an incredible picture. And as we talked about this, I told you, I said, there's going to be a time when he experiences relief. It might have been the next morning when he woke up and realized, I didn't get caught up in that. But I guarantee you there was relief that he experienced when he saw how his teammates responded to him. And he saw that he wasn't alone. And on this conversation, we've been talking about, okay, how do we begin to take our lives in directions that are going to, that have destinations that we want to arrive at? And it's been really cool because throughout this series, a lot of you have been telling stories about how you're beginning to change direction and you're beginning to experience this in your life. And there are all sorts of really cool stories coming out of this series. And just actually next week, you're going to get a chance to be able to hear some of those stories because we're going to have a baptism here. And I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and next week we're having a baptism. There are going to be several people who are going to be baptized here. I was having a conversation again with someone just a couple days ago, and I was telling them, yeah, we have a baptism coming up in 2 weeks, there are several people who are going to be taking this step. And they looked at me and they said something. I've been hearing this a lot lately. They said, man, you guys have baptisms there all the time. And I didn't say this to them, but inside of my head, I look back and I thought to myself, we're a church. That's what we do. Right? And it's awesome. And next week, you're going to get a chance to be able to hear those stories that are coming out of this series, and you'll be able to experience those firsthand. But it's been great. And for some of you, you're beginning to realize, wait a second, I was headed this direction, but I need to change direction. And you're identifying, okay, where do I want to be and how do I get there? And it's been wonderful for you. But at the same time, there's kind of the flip side to this series. And for some of us, as we've been walking through this conversation, for some of you, this has been a really, really hard series. And it's been a really, really difficult series. Because you're beginning to ask yourself, where do I want to be? And you're looking at where you wanted to be, and you're beginning to realize that it's not going to happen. And for some of us, it's because of decisions that we've made. For others of us, it's because of decisions that someone else made, directions that we were on, directions that the people we were with were on. For some of us, it's just because of life and things that were outside of our control. But we're looking at where we want to be, and we're looking at where we are, and we're beginning to realize that this isn't going to happen. And as we've walked through this series and we've talked about how we can begin to change our direction to arrive where we want to arrive, in the back of your mind, there's just been this voice that's saying, that dream that you had, it's just not going to happen. And you're beginning to realize what all of us realize at one point or another, that not all dreams come true. And sometimes it's because of our direction. Sometimes it's because of the direction of the people around us. And sometimes it's just because of life. And so your entire life, you dreamed of being a father. You're beginning to realize it's not going to happen. And man, you dreamed of the life that you were going to spend with him. It was going to be incredible. But the relationship is crumbling and you're realizing it's not going to happen. And you, man, this business, you poured your life into this business. And it's falling apart and you're like, and you're coming to the realization that that dream that you had, that place you wanted to be, you're not going to be able to get there. And you thought she was the one. I mean, you thought, you were positive she was the one. But it's not going to happen. You're standing here and you're looking back at a marriage that fell apart. Or a relationship where you went two different directions. A business that collapsed. An abortion that, or an adoption that didn't make it through. And you're realizing that this dream that you had isn't going to become a reality. And what I want to do over the next 2 weeks is I want to have a conversation with you about those times when we begin to realize that where we wanted to be, we're not going to be able to get there. Those times where we realize that whether it's our fault or someone else's fault, or no matter whose fault it is, that dream, it's just not going to become a reality. And for other people, it may seem insignificant, but for you, this is what you wanted. More than anything else, this is what you wanted. And as we've walked through this series, you've heard us talk about directions and you've heard us talk about choices, and it's been devastating for you. Because you're realizing, man, it's just not going to work out. next 2 weeks as we talk through this, I want to talk to you about two stories that we find in the life of a man named David. And next week, we're going to kind of look at, okay, how do we actually respond when we find ourselves in that situation? Next week, we're going to take a look at, okay, what is the proper response? Like how do we move forward in that situation? How do we recover in that situation? How do we celebrate in that situation? How do we experience everything that God promises us that we can experience in Him? How do we do that in those broken, shattered dreams times? But the truth is, if I shared that with you today, for most of you, you'd hear the story of David responding to God in that way, and you'd walk out of here and you'd say, that's nice, but that's David. That's nice, and Bible stories always seem to work out that way, you know, but it's not really real. It's probably just figurative anyway, and it'd be really easy for you to be able to walk away from it. And so this week, what I want to do is I want to share with you the story that brought David to the point where he could respond the way he was supposed to respond, where he could respond in a way that brought life instead of a way that brought death. And I want to share with you a story from David's life where David didn't respond the right way. The passage that we're going to dive into is found in 1 Samuel chapter 21. I want to give you a little bit of a background on this story. Because if you don't understand the background in this story, you're going to totally miss why David responds the way that he does and how this whole story kind of plays out and how it factors into exactly where you are. And I'm telling you, even if you're not there today, there's going to be a point in your life where you're going to realize, wait a second, what I dreamed for isn't going to happen. And for David, this is exactly where he finds himself as this story is playing out. Because David has kind of an interesting life story. The first time that we come in contact with David, David is basically tending for sheep. He's a part of this pretty large family. And this crazy prophet guy steps into David's life and he calls David's family together, right? And he's got all of David's brothers and then David. And he comes to David's father and he says, listen, I'm going to anoint the next king of Israel from your family. And so David's father, right, is like, oh, okay, I bet I know who it is. And so he goes and gets one of his sons, right? Not David. As a matter of fact, he goes and gets all of his sons before he goes and gets David. His dad really believed in him. Right? And this crazy prophet guy's like, no, not him, not him, not him, not him, not him. And then they get to David, right? And he pours oil on his head, and he looks at this shepherd, and he says, you're going to be the next king of Israel. Now, there's a couple problems with that. One, there's already a king of Israel, right? And the way that this works is that the king of Israel is handed down to his son, right, and to his son. And so this crazy guy comes up and says, listen, David, I want you to know God is going to make you the next king of Israel. Now go back and be a shepherd. And David's like, but then all of a sudden these things start to play out in David's life. And as David is a shepherd, if you know the story, there's this point where he's taking food to his brothers, and his brothers are all in the army now because they're a little bit older, and David's still at home taking care of sheep, and he's taking food to his brothers, and he finds himself on this battlefield, right? And there's this giant out there named Goliath, and Goliath is basically like taunting the nation of Israel, saying, listen, you know, you guys got nothing on us, you can't take us, like send out your strongest guy, and they're totally intimidated by this guy. I mean, he is huge. And when nations battled at that point, it wasn't just about nation against nation, it was God against God. And Goliath is out there saying, like, your God's got nothing on our God. Like, you've got nothing on us. And David arrives at this battlefield, and he's like, listen, this guy can't talk about my God that way. And so I don't know why they let him do it. I think they were just like, well, you know, what is it going to hurt? We'll just lose a shepherd. Right? So they're like, all right, you can go out and fight him. That's cool, right? And he goes out. He's got no armor. He's just got this slingshot. And I think Goliath, you know, just like he's kind of mocking David as he's walking out. And he's just kind of like, what is this guy coming out to? He doesn't even have armor. And he lets David get close. David takes him out. And all of a sudden, David becomes a hero. And then he becomes a warrior, and all these things begin to play out in David's life, and all of a sudden David becomes exceptionally famous. And then he gets a job inside the palace. After he kills Goliath, Saul actually gives David his daughter. And so now David's beginning to see, like, wait a second, that crazy prophet might be right, because now I'm married to the king's daughter. I'm becoming exceptionally popular. And now I'm working in the palace. And I don't know how this plays out. This is one of the weird things about the story of David. I don't know how this works, right? Because David's job in the palace, right, was to play a harp. Now, there's some things you need to understand about David for you to understand why this doesn't really click with me. Because David, like, is a big guy. Like, if you grew up in Sunday school in the United States, you probably think David's like this really shrimpy little, like, weak guy, right? Like tiny little arms and just carries around a slingshot like a little nerd, right? But when we're introduced to David, we find out that David has actually defeated a lion and a bear. Not with a slingshot. He ripped their jaws open with his bare hands. This dude is tough. Right? Then he not only does he kill Goliath, right? Which kind of fits into the United States, like, little David thing, you know, because it's just a little guy with a slingshot, take him out. Not only does he kill Goliath, but he chops Goliath's head off with Goliath's own sword, right? And then he becomes an incredible warrior for the nation of Israel. This guy grows up to be the king who conquers more than any other king before him. I mean, this dude is tough. And then he plays a harp. What is that? Right? Sorry, that's a total tangent, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you got this giant dude, and he's just, like, playing a harp, making Saul feel better, you know? Like, but that's what his job was inside the palace. And everything is going in the right direction, and I'm almost positive. In the back of David's mind, he's like, man, this is happening. This dream is becoming a reality. I can't believe this is happening. And I don't know how it's going to play out yet, but man, I'm going to be king. And one day, everything changes. Because one day, Saul's sitting there and he's looking at this guy across the room from him. And he's realizing that he's getting more powerful and he's getting more popular. And he picks up his spear and he whips it across the room at David. And luckily, David escapes. But in one day, everything in David's life takes a U-turn. And we find out that Saul is hell-bent on killing David. And he will stop at nothing before he kills him. And so David does what most of us do. As a matter of fact, this passage is like a mirror image of how most of us respond when we begin to realize that dream, it ain't happening. And David's sitting there and he's like, yeah, I'll be lucky if I'm alive tomorrow, let alone if I become king. I'm lucky if I make it through the night, let alone become king. And so listen to how this story plays out. It starts in 1 Samuel chapter 21, verse 1. It says, David went into the town of Nob to see Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech trembled when he saw him. Why are you alone? He asked. Why is no one with you? Nob is basically a city in the nation of Israel where only priests live. Right? And so David figures this is going to be a safe place for me to go. He flees from Saul. He goes straight to the city of Nob. He goes to see this priest named Ahimelech, right? And so he steps in to Ahimelech's, like, office or whatever it is there, his house there. And Ahimelech is, like, freaking out, right? Because David doesn't just show up places unannounced, right? I mean, this guy is a big deal. It's basically like, you know, Joe Biden knocks on your door tomorrow and is like, hey, I'm here. And you're like, what are you doing here? And where are the dudes with the thing in their ear? right? Like, why are you all alone? And Ahimelech's looking at David, and David usually travels with like a huge amount of people that take care of him, that watch out for him, right? And David's all by himself, and he says, why are you here? Why did you come to me? And why are you by yourself? Listen to how David responds. The king sent me on a private matter, David said. He told me not to tell anyone why I am here. I have told my men where to meet me later. Now, what is there to eat? Give me 5 loaves of bread or anything you have. He says, I'm on a secret mission. This is literally how this plays out. I'm on a secret mission from the king. And my men are outside the city in that grove of trees waiting for me. Right? And I don't know, as you read through the story, you're like, Ahimelech's not all that bright, right? And he's like, so give me something to eat. And if he didn't get it by the fact that he's alone, right, that he's coming by himself, unannounced, totally by himself, telling this story that he's on a secret mission, his men are outside. Not only that, he doesn't have any food. Okay, so the king sent you on a mission without any food, by yourself, and he told you to come to me to get it? But he buys it. And so, he says, give me 5 loaves of bread or anything else that you have. The priest responds back to him. He says, we don't have any regular bread, the priest replied. But there is holy bread, which you can have if your young men have not slept with any women recently. Now, there's some explaining that needs to happen here, right? Because you're like, what is he talking about? Inside of the area where they worshiped here, right? There were loaves of bread that were set aside every week as a symbol of how God provides for the nation of Israel, right? And so there would have been 12 loaves that were set aside. They were called the loaves of presence, right? And each of those loaves represented one of the tribes of the nation of Israel. And these loaves were representative of the fact that God provides for them. That in the craziest of circumstances, that God would provide what they needed. Right? Now don't miss the irony of the situation. David is running, right? He's like, I'm panicked. I don't know what to do. I'm out of control. And he runs and he asks for food. And the priest says, the only food we have is the food that symbolizes that God provides in crazy circumstances. You see the irony of the situation? He says, but you kind of have to be a priest to eat that. Because at the end of each week, the priest then would eat that bread and then they'd make new bread to replace it. He says, but it's kind of special, it's kind of set apart, it's kind of holy. There's a reason that it's here. And so David responds back to him and he says, don't worry, David replied. I never allow my men to be with women when they are on a campaign. And since they stay clean even on ordinary trips, how much more this one? He says, no, don't worry. We're pure. We're ready. We're holy. We're good with God. We're in great shape with God. He says, and even if we did that on a regular mission, like this is a special mission, right? And now it's taken on a whole new level, right? Because before it was like a special mission from the king, but now this is like a super special, like to borrow from the Blues Brothers, like this is like a mission from God. And he's like, yeah, oh, it'll be fine. Give us that bread because we're good to go. Since there was no other food available, the priest gave him the holy bread. David never should have touched that. The bread of the presence that was placed before the Lord in the tabernacle. It had just been replaced that day with fresh bread. Now Doeg the Edomite, Saul's chief herdsman, was there that day, having been detained before the Lord. This is a key thing for you to realize as the story plays out. You see, Saul's chief herdsman was there. And we don't know if they didn't realize he could overhear or what, but he's watching this whole thing play out. And he's watching Ahimelech give this food to David. And then David asks an even crazier question. Verse 8. David said to Ahimelech, do you have a spear or a sword? The king's business was so urgent that I didn't even have time to grab a weapon. Come on, Ahimelech, this is ridiculous. Okay, you're a warrior. That's what you do. I don't even, and for Ahimelech, this would have been a weird question anyway. They're priests. Oh yeah, let's go back to the garrison in the back. I've got plenty of swords back there, right? Like, and so he's like, well, I don't have anything. And listen to what he says. He says, I only have the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah. The priest replied, it's wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. Take that if you want it, for there's nothing else here. There's nothing like it, David replied. Give it to me. And so he took it. He says, I don't have anything to eat. He said, all I have for you is the bread that symbolizes that God provides for those that he's chosen in crazy situations. He says, I don't have any weapons. He says, all I have is the weapon of the guy you killed for doubting God. You got a spear? You got a sword? Oh, no, the only sword I have is the sword of the guy that God allowed you to take out by yourself when you were just a kid. And it's amazing. You watch this thing play out. And all of a sudden, David's life takes a U-turn. All of a sudden, this dream, it's like, man, this is never going to happen. I'm barely going to be able to wake up. And he just runs. He doesn't ask God. He's like, all right, God, I'm done with this. I'm getting out of here. I'm on my own. And he doesn't care what it takes. He will lie. He will do whatever it takes. And God's just putting these things right in front of him, calling him back. I'm the one who provides. I took care of you then, and I'll take care of you now. Today, as you walk through this, as you come to the realization that man, you know what, I don't know if that dream is going to become a reality. Let me ask you something. What do you turn to when everything starts to unravel? What do you turn to? What do you run to when all of a sudden you begin to realize that what you hoped for isn't going to become a reality? Is it a pill? Is it a bottle? Is it revenge? You know what? He hurt me. I'm going to destroy him. You know, if she's going to do this, if she's going to take my dream, I will destroy her. What do you run to? What do you turn to? And then my second question is this. What is it in your life that reminds you over and over and over again that God provides? Because I'll bet you there's something in your life. Maybe it's a person, maybe it's a picture, maybe it's a room in your house, maybe it's a friend that you have. I don't know what it is, but I bet you there's something in your life that's just like Goliath's sword, that is just a reminder over and over again that God provides, a reminder of a time when you watch God take shattered dreams, just pieces, and begin to pull them back together. What is it in your life that reminds you that no matter what it feels like, no matter what the situation is, that God's still in control and that God can take things that are shattered and make things that are beautiful? What do you run to? And what do you need to look at? You see, in our lives, when things begin to get out of control, we try to take control. And for almost every single one of us, when things begin to get out of control, control, when all of a sudden life begins to turn around on us, when all of a sudden everything begins to fall apart and those dreams begin to shatter, our natural tendency is exactly what David's natural tendency was, to grab hold of it. All right, we're going to be in control and to take control of our lives and to begin to force things to happen and to begin to say, okay, God, you didn't work this out for me, so now I'm going to work it out for me. But it doesn't work. It never works. And as you continue to read the story, David continues to lie. He continues to run. He continues to flee. But this is the story that changes David's life forever. Because as David continues to run, as he continues to flee, Saul finds out from his chief herdsman what happened that day. He finds out that Ahimelech helped David out. He goes to the city of Nob, and he kills Ahimelech. He destroys his family, and he slaughters the entire city. And there's someone who escapes, and he runs and he tells David, and David falls flat on his face, and he begins to realize that, listen, when I begin to take control, I don't make things better, I make things worse. And this story in David's life changes everything for him. And I bet if we went around this room and we told our stories, we'd hear that story over and over and over again. And I bet if we went around this room, we'd hear that same story over and over and over again. The story that when we tried to take control, when we tried to bring it back, when we tried to make it happen, when we tried to force it to happen, it just got worse. What do you run to? What are you running to? And what do you need to look at? You see, David learned that day that when everything begins to get out of control, it's not the time to take control. It's the time to hang on to the one who still has control. Whether it feels like it to you in that situation or not, he's still in control. And when you're sitting there and you're looking at the pieces and they're shattered in front of you and you're wondering, I don't know what my life is going to look like because it's not going to look anything like what I hoped it was going to look like. Let me tell you something. God still has something beautiful in store for you. As long as you don't grab control, as long as you allow him to be in control. And as you watch David's life and he hears that story and he sees that play out, all of a sudden you begin to hear these words over and over again in the life of David. He consulted his God. He inquired of his God. Because David realized that this was the time to lean hardest on him. Today, I don't know where you are. For some of you, this might be just a message that you're going to put into practice in the future, because right now, man, you're riding high and you're loving life and everything has fallen into place. For others of you, you know exactly how this plays out. Because as we've been having this conversation, you've been looking at those shattered dreams and you're like, I don't know what to do with this. Go to him. Give the pieces to him. And I promise you, he can make something beautiful out of something that's broken. Will you pray with me? Father, today I want to bring these before me, before you. And if you're here today and if you've experienced that, I want to pray specifically for you. For those of you who are walking through those shattered dreams right now, for those of you who are confronting those shattered dreams right now, I want to pray specifically for you, and I invite you to join into this with me. Father, I want to bring before you those who are here today who are trying to deal with the fact that this dream that they've had for so long isn't going to become a reality. And they're looking at their life, and maybe their life took a U-turn. And Father, sometimes it's because of what we've done, and sometimes it's because of what others have done. But I know for a lot of us here, as we're walking through this, the question is, God, why didn't you do something? And Father, I know based on reading the life of David and based on David's conversation with you that over and over again, he brought that question to you. And my prayer for those who are here today who are walking through this is that they would realize that this isn't the time to take control. That they would walk into your presence. And I pray that they would be honest. I pray that they would realize that you want them to be honest with you. That they'd walk into your presence as David often did and say, why is this happening? That they'd walk into your presence and say, God, I broke this thing. It's all busted. And that they'd walk into your presence and say, God, I've been broken. And I don't know what to do. But that they would walk into your presence. And that rather than them grabbing control, they would hang on to you. And that they would know. And Father, let them be encouraged this morning with the fact that you can make something beautiful out of these broken dreams. And may they walk out of here with confidence, not confidence in their ability to make it happen, not confidence in their ability to take control, but confidence in the fact that you love them and that you can bring these pieces back together. Father, I thank you that as we walk through this together today, you love these before me more than I do. And so Father, I ask that you'd walk with them through this. And that this would be the changing point in their story. That this would be the turning point in their story, as this was in David's life. And they'd begin to experience how you can heal and how you can restore. Father, this is all about you. And we just want to be your children. In Jesus' name.